We are looking to empower current and former foster youth.
Unbelievably resilient.
The next generation of great foster youth.
And now,
season two of the You Are Foster Strong podcast. Foster Strong podcast.
Hey everyone, this is Raya. We are kicking off the season two finale of Foster Strong. I cannot believe we are concluding season two already. It feels like we just started and finished season one, so I can't believe how fast time has gone, but I'm joined by incredible co-hosts and we have a great episode, so let's get started.
What's up everybody? This is Lino.
Hey guys, it's Carrie.
What's going on? This is Nate.
Awesome. Well, today, we wanted to close out season two by talking about a topic that has come up on tons of episodes throughout the podcast so far, and that is resilience. Resilience can be defined as an ability to recover from or adjust to misfortune or change. And to accompany that definition, we have a quote from Charles Darwin. "It's not the strongest of species that survive, nor the most intelligent, but the ones most resilient and responsive to change."
Which I think is really important because I studied like environment and stuff like that, but like it's, and I've heard that quote so many damn times that I feel like a lot of people misinterpret it. It's like survival of the fittest is what they always quote. But realistically, it's not about, you know, what do we mean by the fittest? It's literally just adapt and overcome the change that we have.
Yeah, growing up, I used to always use the saying, you know, adapt or die. You know, life just keeps moving, whether I was going from house to house, you know, group home to group home. I always just kept repeating that to myself, you know, adapt or die, which may be a little dramatic. I wasn't going to die in a group home or a foster home, but it was just that mentality. But it's just that mentality of, you know, just keep on going, keep, you know, keep adapting to your situation and just keep, you know, progressing as a person.
Yeah, that's so funny. I feel like growing up, I always heard, oh, you're so flexible. Where'd you learn to be so flexible? And it's like, well, when you're in foster care, you kind of have no choice. It's like, here's your trash bag, put your belongings in them, and you will be meeting a new family by the end of the day. Like, you have no other choice. What else are you going to do but be flexible and be adaptable?
Absolutely. And I think we all carry those qualities. We share stories about them. We've made jokes about our quirks that have come out because of our resiliency. And I'm excited to get more into some of our stories as we go through this episode, talk about what it means to be resilient to us and how we've shown that in our lives and continue to do that today. But last week we talked about Spider-Man and the new Marvel movies that are coming out. And in planning for this episode, we started to dive into superheroes, which was also a common theme throughout season two. And so I'd like to ask you guys kind of about superheroes and some of the ways maybe orphans, as some call it, or just being in foster care is portrayed within those movies.
Yeah, I mean, really heavy themes when we look at a lot of superheroes of they were an orphan or there's some tie, like where they have a broken family. I mean, look at Harry Potter, who was an orphan and lived with his aunt and uncle. Spider-Man is an orphan and lives with his aunt. Superman is an orphan. I think Batman is, correct me if I'm wrong, because I think he's Lino's favorite superhero.
My favorite superhero is Spider-Man. But all these superheroes, this has actually been so common throughout since the first episode. I think it was Sean that was saying Batman the very first episode when we asked him, like, what superhero who was his favorite superhero or something like that. I think that it's just really important. I think just take a moment really quickly and think who automatically comes to mind when you think of superheroes that were, you know, foster youth or, you know, didn't have parents or like, do you think people just do this because it like makes good TV, quote unquote? Like I wanted to pose that question to y'all because I often hear that it's like, oh, it makes good TV because look at all these XYZ things they can do. Oh, and to top it off, they had no parents. So, like, what do you guys think of that?
So, I mean, I think it says a lot. I've, you know, was doing a little research and I was kind of checking out Marvel movies and, you know, it plays into a lot of other movies as well. I just watched Angels in the Outfield and, you know, they're living in a group home in that movie as well. I mean, they're not superheroes, but they do have this special ability to see these angels. And when it comes to Marvel movies, it's just such, you know, a solid theme that, you know, they've either lost one parent, both parents, they never had parents, you know. It seems to be their backstory of, you know, them needing something more in life, you know, and having to find it themselves.
Builds character.
It builds character, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point, Lino, to wonder, like, I guess it's kind of what came first, the chicken or the egg. Like, was it the fact that they're superheroes, they are also, you know, these orphan types, or is it for TV or just part of their story? But at the end of the day, I know that I can look back on specifically Spider-Man and since Carrie mentioned Harry Potter, and I remember watching those movies for the first time and thinking about how in TV, I was represented because I lived with my aunt and uncle, and I really didn't know anybody else who did. And so I remember the first time watching those movies and thinking, just wow, like somebody else, you know, has this experience, and just feeling like I wasn't alone because of that.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting to hear your relation to a superhero and that we're talking about, you know, these superheroes all embody resilience and what resilience means. And that's really a big piece of the storyline in all of these movies. And that's a big piece of our own storyline. And it's a huge piece of the Foster Strong brand. And reading about sort of why this archetype exists, where you have a superhero who's an orphan, and we haven't even dove into the flip side of that, which is also a lot of times there's villains that were former foster youth or an orphan or have some sort of a broken family dynamic, which we'll save that for another episode. Tune back into Foster Strong and we will do a full episode on that. But when I was reading about this like superhero archetype, they were saying how it's really attractive to have an orphan hero dynamic because this orphan is kind of considered a child of the world. And a child of the world, if you have a typical child who's trying to please their parents and they're really worried about doing things right to please their parents, then a child of the world wants to please the world. And so there's this idea that if you're a child of the world, you're trying to save the world and that you owe a duty back to make the world a better place than how it treated you, which I also think is really relevant for us and our team and any advocate who was once in foster care.
I feel personally attacked.
And so I know that we, you know, in talking about resilience, we always talk about how amazing it is. And I also think that we need to give light to like how much pressure is there when we're talking about resilience. And just reading that and like being a child of the world and feeling like you have to save the world and that you have to make the world a better place because you experienced the dark side of it, that's a lot of freaking pressure.
Yeah. And I'd add too that, and I think this is a quality that I have, so I can only imagine it extends beyond myself, but the feeling that you have to do it alone too. I remember being put in situations where I had to make decisions or figure things out, and the only person who could help me was myself. And so to this day, I opt to do things myself. I'm a big DIY person because I know I can figure it out, and I will, and I tend not to ask for help. But I think that pressure is a huge reason why.
Well, do you find yourself enjoying that, you know, personal time? Like, does it give you strength to where, you know, you going out and doing something by yourself, it's, you know, a sense of independence? Because I get that. I go golfing by myself. I go fishing by myself. You know, I'll go on a hike by myself. And I enjoy that time by myself. And I'm a big person. You know, I'm very much an extrovert, and I love big groups, and I love, you know, being around, meeting new people. But when I do get that time, or, you know, say if I've even made plans with people to go and do something, and the plans fall through, I'll go and do it by myself. And I have that independence, and I think it's from, you know, so many years of just having to take care of myself, having, you know, to go out by myself and worry about myself.
Yeah, that's so real. It's funny because in that piece I was reading too, it talks about how loneliness and independence are both emphasized in all of these storylines. And I relate to like feelings of loneliness and sometimes feeling really isolated because of our stories. And on the flip side of that, I also feel really lucky to have chosen family and to have friends that feel like family and to have you all and to really build like maybe not the traditional view of family. And it's also really nice to have, just as you were saying, Nate, like that independence and to feel like, yeah, I can go out and do all these things on my own and I am self-sufficient. And on top of it, look at all that I've been through and I'm still able to be this self-sufficient, independent.
So I think when I hear all of this, what I often come back to is the fact that, I mean, it's almost like they model superheroes after me, right? Because superheroes are some of this unattainable, like fantastical, unrealistic kind of personality, character, archetype, whatever the case is, right? But then when you bring it down to the real world and you look at what are the facets that these superheroes possess and what makes them them, well, we share some things and we share a lot of things in that sense. And so, you know, that independence, I definitely am, I'm just kind of like in a gut way kind of independent. I've never really thought about it in a sense that I've had to be, because I grew up in a large family with like 8+ people. There was always somebody around. So the idea of doing something alone was completely out of the window. It was not unheard of. So I'm not entirely sure if I understand what you or empathize exactly with that type of independence, but I've always maintained and preserved my sense of self in a group. And that's the type of independence that I kind of experienced growing up.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in quite a large family all the ways up until I was 12. But it seemed like, you know, after I had gone to a few group homes, you know, made friends with all the kids and we'd go everywhere together and, you know, definitely would hang out as a group. But when I started going into like the foster homes and I was the only kid there, it was me mainly going out by myself, you know, all the ways across town. You know, I take myself to the movies if I felt like it, just because I'm comfortable with that now. And I used to not be. I used to be, you know, I used to have a bunch of FOMO. Like, you know, I only wanted to go out if I had friends to go out with me. And after a while, after moving around so much, you know, you can't meet up with those people as easily. But I'm not going to, you know, not do things that I want to do. So I just go and I'll take myself out.
You're just like, I'm my own parent. I got
exactly.
This.
Yeah, if I'm thinking all day I'm going to do something. sorry. Yeah, if I'm thinking about one thing all day, because I'm like, get up, you know, as soon as I open my eyes, like I'm ready to rock and roll for the day. And if something's on my mind, you know, whether it's a hike that I've been talking about all week, whatever it may be, as soon as I wake up, you know, I'll see if people want to go with me. But if they don't, it's already set in my mind. Like, this is what I'm doing today.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That independence is beautiful to be able to go out on your own. It's just, I'm like remembering this random conversation I had in college one time when I was talking to someone about being in foster care and they were like, oh my gosh, I would have, you know, typical, I would have never known you were in foster care. Oh my gosh. And I was like, yeah, I was in foster care. And they're like, wow, you're so resilient. And we kind of got into this conversation about like, where does resilience come from? And he asked me, he was like, how do you think that you became so resilient? Like, I know that there's all these statistics stacked against people who were in foster care. Like, what do you think the differing factor is and how do you get resilience? And I honestly, to this day, do not know the answer to that. And I asked someone recently, like, what do you think it is? And they said, I think you're either born with it or not. Which I don't know if I agree with that.
Interesting.
But I'm curious, so what do you guys think? How do you get resilient?
It's interesting, because when I think about like my experiences with resiliency, and particularly around kind of this conversation we're having about independence and having to figure things out on your own or do things on your own, I think specifically about my transition from high school to college and what the whole process of applying was like, filling out student loan applications, scholarships, and just managing the funding and institution of college as a whole. And how I really just kind of figured it out. And whether I was Googling how to fill out my FAFSA or, you know, getting on the phone with people and just figuring out what I had to do to get a scholarship, to have my tuition paid, whatever it was, that was like really the moment that I look back on as something I've done by myself in like, my, I guess, my later or adult-ish life. And so thinking about that time, I question, like, was it the drive that I had to go to college that made me resilient enough to want to put in this work? Like, what factors continued to help me move forward and be resilient? So I don't know if it's something within us or if it's something that we're pulled towards, but I definitely often struggle with the same definition.
Yeah, well, my question for myself also is, like, is it as much resiliency as it is just, like, stubbornness?
Knowing you, Nate, that might be a 50-50 mix.
Yeah. You know, they say stubbornness can be good and bad. And, you know, I definitely see both sides of it in my life, you know. I get my mind locked on something and I just, you know, I'll go for it. And sometimes it doesn't work out in the end. Sometimes I've just told myself, like, this is what you're going to do, do it. And it doesn't work out all the time. But then I'll find another way that's, you know, somewhat of the same, you know, another way that would make me happy. And, you know, I work my way there. You know, you, what, fall down 7 times, get up 8. And I find the direction that works for me.
Mm.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have a lot of words and a lot of thoughts, and you all know that already. So I'll keep this short and brief. there's like this whole analogies and everything that I've kind of constructed to kind of in the like reflection that I've done on my life. But I think what I want to shed light upon at this moment, just, you know, for the sake of brevity and everything, is just like the parenting that did happen. Right, because we often talk about the fatherless or the parentless or the orphaned, etc., and we never really talk about the times in which there was, you know, parenting that happened. And so oftentimes, you know, I had my 1-hour visitation on a monthly basis with my mom and my sister and my mom. We would, you know, initially started off, we were going to a facility, and there was like, you know, it was like supervised and couldn't leave the building, things like that. But at the time, my mom would try and parent a whole lifetime in 1 hour. And she would try to fit in all of her lesson. And sometimes it worked. And sometimes, I mean, she sounded like a broken record sometimes. And it really strained our relationship at that time. So it was really hard at that time. And I would say that, like, we didn't have necessarily the best of relationships at that time. And, you know, over time, I've kind of, you know, we transitioned and we have now a more fulfilling, enriching relationship. But I do remember some of the words that my mom muttered to me when I was younger. And one of the things that she instilled in me was, I think, a sense of autonomy. And she used to always say this exact 3 words, or this 3 stanza phrase, which is, I believe, I confess, I receive. And it just rolls off the tongue really easily. It comes with a lesson. And so she really, really wanted to instill in me this sense that whatever I believe, if I confess it, I will receive it. And I remember, you know, I would just think about it, and she would, you know, almost like preach to me or et cetera, like growing up. And I remember one time in high school, I was going to do a 17-mile run out in Monterey at Pebble Beach. Beautiful, beautiful scenery, but crazy hills and everything, and wild, even wilder to run, since the most I had ever run at the time was like 10 miles. I was a cross-country runner. And during that run, it took me 2 hours to complete this whole thing. I got lost a couple times and, you know, but the whole time I chanted and I said that exact, I believe, I confess, I receive. Like I, the way that I breathed it out, I was like, I believe, I confess, like I was, you know what I'm saying? Like when you like have, and I was just like, cause you start thinking about, I had the same like three songs stuck in my head sometimes when I ran and it just like on repeat. So I wanted to get away from that. So I just like started doing this thing and I wanted to see how, like, what was my discipline, my self-discipline. And honestly, I feel like I learned lessons from that. And so essentially I do want to like say that the sense of autonomy, that whatever, if you feel capable, then that's enough, because that the your own self-conscious is going to affect the outcome of your ability to resolve problems. And that is scientifically proven, that if you go into a problem feeling capable of being able to resolve that, then you're going to be more likely to resolve that problem and to meet that adversity and surpass it. So, you know, whatever you believe, you confess, you receive. And that's just one little moment of parenting that happened in my quote-unquote parentless life.
I feel like in everything that the three of you just shared, that really there is a theme of independence and a choice, an independent choice that you yourself made to put one foot in front of the other. And Lena, what you just said made me think that, like, yeah, every time something hard happens to you, you can either give up or you can choose to go forward. And that because foster care happened to us, there's a lot of shitty things in there that were just being thrown our way. A lot of barriers. And, you know, that was something that we didn't do, is give up. We kept walking one step and forward, one step in front of the other, no matter how hard it was. Because I don't know if you guys feel this way, but it, for me, it was like there was some aspect of hope there. Hope that, like, oh, if I could just get through this, then there will be like some light at the end of the tunnel that I'm working towards. Whether that was like freedom from foster care or the idea of creating family or going to college or having a nonprofit that helps kids in similar situations. Like there's some piece of hope that ties to resilience, I think. And yeah, I guess the one other thing that comes to mind when we're talking about our own definitions of resilience is there's a psychiatrist or psychologist that says resilience is something that you experience, and it's when you feel, you fail, you hurt, you fall. And I feel like as a kid, I could never relate to like what resilience meant, because you're just in survival mode. You're just doing those things. You're experiencing it. You're feeling it. You're hurting. You're falling. And then you get to adulthood, and now we're in this place where everyone's like, you're so resilient. You're so resilient. You're so resilient. And in some ways I get resentful of that. And I'm like, I don't want to be resilient. Yeah. I wanted to have an easy life, and I didn't want to have to fall that many times and get hurt that many times to be independent or to be the person I am today. Like, you know, some days I really do wish there was a different route. I'm so, you know, happy and grateful for where I'm at and think that it shaped me into who I am today. But I don't know if you guys relate to that too, that sometimes that feeling of like, ugh, I'm like sick of being so freaking resilient all the time.
Humble.
Yeah. That's a really interesting thought, Carrie, because I've talked a lot on the podcast on different episodes about being a planner, very type A. I plan a lot of things. I plan all things in my life. And I'm slowly getting to a point where I don't have much else to plan. You know, like you graduate college, you plan to get your job, you stand in one job, and then you plan for your dream job. And I'm kind of running out, and that means I don't know what's next or what forward even means sometimes. And so I definitely feel that maybe it's resentment or whatever towards this resiliency, because I feel like I always had to be fighting to figure out what was next and just put blinders on and get myself there. And now I don't know what I'm looking at. So it can definitely be a little stressful. But also a sideways thought that I had, you know, while we're having this conversation is just how resilience can look different to everyone. And so that, I think, even more so troubles the definition that we put on it, because, you know, oftentimes you're successful, that people say, and so that's what despite, you know, what you've experienced. And so that's what makes you resilient. But success looks different for everyone. And so to judge someone's resiliency by where they are versus where they came from, even though the distances are different, you still made it that distance. And I think it's really important that we recognize that no matter the distance, you've still made it to this point, wherever that is for you. And that is resiliency.
I want you to know about the work that I get to do at Institute for Family. I'm Isaiah. And at the Institute, we believe that families are the foundation for healthy children and even stronger communities. You see, family voice is key to figuring out what we can do differently to ensure that families have the supports that they actually need to thrive. And that's why we are handing over the mic to families and we are turning up the volume because their stories matter. And when we listen, we learn and are inspired to act. We are acting alongside families for families. And I want you to walk alongside families with us. You can subscribe to our email list at instituteforfamily.org. That's instituteforfamily.org. To tune into incredible family stories, learn with us from their firsthand expertise, and help us imagine something more for families.
So as we've touched upon all these themes throughout the seasons, throughout the episodes, of resilience and being unbelievably resilient and being foster strong and everything, the one thing that I really want to stress is that, you know, if you're out there and you're a peer and you're someone who has experienced this and you know you're someone that feels that the pressure to be resilient or to show up in a resilient way or to show up successful or to be successful or whatever, you know, to strive for greatness, that sometimes we also got to recognize that what we're not doing by, you know, our success, we're not measuring it according to somebody else's. And I think what I'm trying to say in that is specifically that we oftentimes can very easily put pressure on each other through our own accomplishments, meaning that you can measure up someone's success against somebody else's. And that oftentimes comes together when we as peers come together, when you get a bunch of former foster youth together and they're doing all kinds of great things, it's very easy to fall into this cycle of like, I have to have my shit together. I have to be on top of it all the time. I have to be, you know, accomplishing things and so on and so forth. And it's just like this relentless hamster wheel of like tiresome resilience. And that's not what Foster Strong or resilience or being unbelievably resilient is. It's, you know, hope. And I agree entirely with what you were saying, Carrie, is that hope in some sense, it's like self-prescribed. And it's you yourself drive it and your thoughts and your beliefs drive that. And I think that's what comes from that, the whole sense of like self-autonomy and everything is, which sounds redundant, self-autonomy is the idea that the belief comes from me. So like you set your own tone, you set your own narrative. And so, you know, if there's one thing that we've gotten across throughout all these seasons and throughout all these themes is that we hope that you feel emboldened to define your own narrative.
Yeah, that is so important. And we've talked a lot about that behind the scenes, but let us just say it out loud and to all of our listeners, what resilience isn't is being perfect. What resilient isn't is never having bad days. What resilient isn't is faking it when you have bad days and not being authentic. What resilience is standing in your truth and knowing that like there are, you know, you've been through a lot and acknowledge that and feel that and process that and let it move through you. Don't feel pressured by the world, by society, by the people around you to always come across as a strong rock that has made it through everything and is unshakable. Because sometimes there are days where like you need a shoulder to cry on, you need someone else to lean on. And what we don't want to promote here at Foster Strong is some of those false ideas about resilience that can sometimes be harmful for people.
Yeah, I mean, as I've gotten older, I've I've learned it's okay to rely on people, and I've learned it's okay to kind of, you know, take a step back every now and again and not be so hard on myself for not, you know, accomplishing things as quickly as I thought I would, or, you know, exactly how I thought they were going to play out. Because I know, Raya, you're a big planner, but I'm honestly, I've lived most of my life just by, you know, living in the moment. And that's kind of where I'm comfortable. And, you know, sometimes I make, you know, good decisions, sometimes I make bad decisions, but overall, I know the direction I'm going. And that's kind of where I've, you know, hung on to things, is I know the person I want to be, I know where I've come from. And in between all that, I've had to stop, you know, comparing myself to others, comparing myself to my peers, looking at social media, seeing that things that they are doing. And, you know, and that's the thing about social media. I feel like a lot of it is like people's best moments. You know, people put on that smiley face, mm-hmm. you know, they put all their best moments on there, but you don't see the struggle that they go through to get to those moments. And that's something that I've, you know, been working with, honestly, a lot more in these last few years, is just being okay where I'm at in my life, the steps it took to get there, and just imagining what those people had to go through to get to their, you know, to their successes.
Yeah. And what's more is that, you know, comparing yourself to your future and past self as well. You know, in some sense, like, we have shown up in certain ways in the past, and we're going to show up in certain ways in the future. And I think what you said, first off, I that's me. I'm not the planner in that sense as well. I'm a one marshmallow today versus the potential of two marshmallows tomorrow kind of a person as well. And the way that I see that is, it's just like, I have this idea of who I want to be. And if I'm always striving for that, then I'm never going to be satisfied in where I'm at currently. And so at a certain point, I just got to pivot and think about how I'm satisfied with where I'm at now. And that has to do with, you know, even that marshmallow today versus the two marshmallows tomorrow, right? Like, this is like quoting some like old experiment that's been debunked now, that, you know, they gave these kids an option. They were like, we can give you one marshmallow now for sure, 100% you get it, or we flip a coin and you have a chance tomorrow to get two marshmallows. Which one are you going to do? And so, like, you know, they said they were trying to find like, what are these two types of people, which clearly people are way more complex than that. But I think the allegory in this is that if I'm satisfied with the marshmallow that I have right now, then I never have to worry about what's coming tomorrow, or who I'll be tomorrow. If I'm always happy doing what I am doing right now, if I find and strive to ways to find fulfillment in my current existence, then I don't have to worry about where I'm going to be tomorrow, because I'm going to be doing the same thing, finding my happiness and living my life, living my truth.
Yeah, and for those Brooklyn Nine-Nine fans, in one of the more recent episodes, the theme around that whole episode is to enjoy the journey and not the destination. And I think that's a huge part of what we're talking about, is resiliency is a journey. That journey looks different for everyone. And it's important that we not focus on resilience being a destination, something that we've all achieved. It's something that we truly experience on a daily basis and just entirely throughout our lives, as many of us do.
Yeah. And one point that I want to make for professionals who are working in the child welfare field is, let young people define resilience alongside of you. Because I do think, I see, being here in Washington, D.C., there's so many advocates who are former foster youth who are constantly flying out to D.C. to advocate for legislative change. And that's all really important, and that's all really great. But I think we're missing a huge population of people who are so equally resilient as all of us. They just may not have the same credentials on their resume. And so absolutely. I'm kind of struggling to find the words, but I want to make space for those people who have incredible stories of resilience and are doing amazing things, but yet, like, they're not being invited into some of these spaces to speak about their experiences. And what we are trying to do at Foster Strong is really build a bigger platform, but also want to encourage other people to do the same. Like, do not discredit people just because their resume doesn't look like a cookie cutter, you know, college graduate who interned at Microsoft, because there's so much more to resilience and success and Yeah.
And some beyond that too, that they're not going to sound necessarily like they're not going to sound like this. They're not going to come off like this. They're not going to address you like this. And when you invite people who have experienced very hard lives into a space, it's going to be messy, because life is messy. And in some sense, but what you know what I can guarantee as well is that you'll grow from that. You'll learn from that. You'll understand life in a better way, because you will be able to, in some sense, learn from the resilience of these people.
Well, guys, I can't believe that we are, you know, closing out this season, but what an unbelievable conversation to have to close it out. I think we have addressed so many people in our audience that wear different hats and sometimes multiple hats. And so I hope that everyone who listens to Foster Strong has taken away something, if not many things, from this season and the last. And there will definitely be more to come. And I was hoping Carrie could tell us a little bit more about what Foster Strong has planned for the future.
We have a lot planned for the future. And we have to keep you all on your toes, so we can't tell you all of our plans for the future. We also are trying to live in the moment and enjoy the fact that we just successfully recorded 2 seasons with all of our team virtual all across the country. Woo-hoo. We're all spread out. Half of our team has never even met each other in person. And so that is resilience right there. Doing this through a pandemic, doing this, you know, with all of the challenges, we should feel so incredibly proud of ourselves. I'm so proud of this team and all that we've accomplished with, you know, wrapping up our second season here. And our organization, Foster Strong, continues to grow. And we are excited to go on this journey alongside you. So make sure that you are following us on all of our social media. Make sure that you're keeping up with us by subscribing to our podcast and joining our email list, and that will be the best way for you to know about upcoming projects that we are working on.
Yes, and to kind of tie into that, we are always doing the next generation of great. We're looking for the next generation of great foster youth, whether it's you or somebody you know. Please email us at podcast@urfosterstrong.org and tell us why you or your friend, in 500 words or less, why you are the next generation of great. There's many different ways to, you know, tell us that, whether it's your resilience story, whether it's just your testimony of your life. There's numerous ways to kind of, to express yourself and show yourself, because we all come from different backgrounds. We all have different stories, but we're all trying to share the same message. And please reach out to us.
We're all like available and ready on call. You know, I mean, obviously we have other stuff going on as well. We're always busy, but you know, please feel free to reach out. We also have a section called Aging Out, which essentially is pretty much resources. We bring you resources, you know, effectual things that either we ourselves have taken advantage of. The resources that we have for you today is One Simple Wish as a foundation, and just Google One Simple Wish. Check it out.
All right. Well, that was quite a packed episode. And so I'd love if maybe everyone could give a one-liner at Lino that they've kind of taken away for themselves or that they want to share with others, just to kind of highlight the huge conversation around resiliency, independence, representation in movies, and honestly anything that's also come out of season 2.
I always have a saying that, you know, I guess now that I'm looking at it, has a lot to do with resiliency, but my big saying, no matter what I'm going through, if it's something small or big, is that, you know, there's nothing to it but to do it. And so if I find myself, myself stuttering, you know, like stutter stepping and kind of getting caught up on my own thoughts, like that's the last thought that comes in my head. And that's what kind of pushes me over is, you know, just, you know, there's nothing to it but to do it. Get it done.
That's cool.
Or it's an even Nate quote. I love that.
Nate quote. Or another one I really like is actually from Joe Dirt, which is "Life's a garden, dig it."
I dig it. Oof, bad
That's
joke.
That's incredible.
Yeah, recently I was telling somebody that little quote, and I was just kind of being funny, and they came back to me like 2-3 weeks later, and they were just like, thank you so much. Like, I just been re-saying, you know, life's a garden, dig it in my head. And they had no idea it was from a movie, Joe Dirt. I had to tell them that it was from this comedy movie, but it was very inspirational to them. And I'm like, I'm glad I was able to introduce this little saying to you.
That's beautiful. I love that. And I think I might get it on a shirt, to be honest. I would just say that I think this conversation was so great. Really, we say you are unbelievably resilient all the time, but to take some time to dissect that and think about what it means for each of us, and we hear it all the time, and what does that mean when we hear it? I think it's just a nice reflection. And for me, walking away from this conversation, I just feel like resilience is something that is deeply personal and is something that is always evolving for each of us. So that's my takeaway.
My takeaway, well, first off, that I think that rings so clear. It is very, very personal. For me, I would say my takeaway is, I think, Nate, when you were talking about that, I guess it just like clarified that a little more for me, that about comparing oneself to their future and past selves or their past sense of self. I feel like that's just something that is really sticking with me, that I just need to make sure that, you know, I have grace with myself and that I don't hold myself to some unrealistic standard by nature of my future or past self. Super meta, but that's on brand for me.
Yeah, well, I think it's okay to hold yourself to a higher standard, but you know, you got to give yourself some leniency sometimes, that, you know, things aren't going to always play out the way you want them to. And, you know, you can't be so hard on yourself sometimes. You got to maybe just take a step back and then do it again.
Just
yeah,
dig it.
I think you all nailed it. And this conversation has got me thinking. And I think I'll walk away with this, continuing to think about Carrie's question and just, where does resilience come from? I wonder that about myself, about those around me. And so I think I'm going to walk away with that. And I hope you all, again, have great takeaways from this episode, as well as the many others in season 2 and season 1. If you haven't already listened, please go check them out. We share great stories about ourselves in season 1, and we are joined by some amazing guests throughout season 2. So definitely tune in and hear some of those. While we're on this break between season 2 and what's to come, please check us out on social media. On Instagram, we can be found at @urfosterstrong, and our website is urfosterstrong.org. We will keep up with posts, sharing new episodes, sharing resources, and any other exciting things that will be coming out of Foster Strong over the next few months. So definitely be on the lookout, and we look forward to talking to you guys again soon. Bye, everyone.
Peace out.
See you later.
And our last quote to send you all off is, resilience is accepting your new reality, even if it's less good than the one you had before. You can fight it, you can do nothing but scream about what you've lost, or you can accept that and try to put together something that's good. And that's from Elizabeth Edwards. Bye, everyone.
Check us out on Instagram @urfosterstrong, and stay tuned with all the great things that we're doing on our website @urfosterstrong.org. And remember, you are unbelievably resilient. Your story matters.